It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll tour some pipelines by air.
Back taxiing runway 24, Marshall County.
That's all pipeline. See, and they have not hydroseeded that. You see what I'm talking about? And they've got that apron, that tarping material that's just supposed to prevent the loading of sediment down. Yeah. But they didn't hydroseed any of that.
We'll learn more about pipelines and how they could be affecting giant salamanders in the region. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. We fielded quite a few questions from people throughout the region who want to know more about a major deal the state of West Virginia struck with China Energy, the largest energy company in China. Glennis Board recently sat down with the director of WVU's Energy Institute to get more insight on how this deal was made and what the implications might be. Here's a segment of that interview.
So then tell me, when did the possibility of collaborating with this Chinese company really hit your radar?
Well, this partnership with the precursor company of China Energy, Shenhua, was one of the two companies that merged to create China Energy. That partnership between WVU predates me at the university. It's been going on for about 15 years in developing technologies to convert coal to liquid fuels and also for carbon capture and storage through some programs at the university. We've had this relationship ongoing, but about 3 years ago now, we started developing some ideas for investment opportunities for then Shenhua in West Virginia because of the resources that are here in the state.
Commerce officials say projects are going to focus on power generation, chemical manufacturing, and underground storage of natural gas liquids and derivatives. So this idea of a storage hub is something you've really been focused on. And in a nutshell, the idea is that, you know, we want to learn from our past and not just export all of our natural resources to try to attract economic development here with this gas storage hub. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Because even 5 years ago now at the university, we launched an initiative then called a Mountain of Excellence in Natural Gas Utilization. And this was specifically designed around taking the resources and adding value before we export them. So instead of exporting the commodities, coal in rail cars, or electrons on transmission lines, now we have an opportunity for a rebirth and adding value to the raw materials through converting them into plastics and then manufacturing. Every time you add value, you add jobs and you add wealth where the resources is extracted.
And you've said or quoted there could be economic development and thousands, 100,000 jobs.
Well, the American Chemistry Council has estimated that it would be about 101,000 jobs, and their estimate was about $36 billion of investment in the region that is just waiting to happen. The American Chemistry Council's assumption is that we're successful in building the storage and trading hub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm still a little bit unclear, and I've been talking with community partners who are also unclear about this. When you talk about that volume of jobs, what kind of jobs are we talking about? Are we talking about four-year degree jobs, associate's degrees? Like, how do we prepare for this?
It is a mixture of four-year and associate's and trade jobs. The bulk of them will be associates and trade jobs in the manufacturing facilities. First is a cracker to take the ethane and convert it into the first step of plastics. And then it's all the derivatives of creating something from the plastics, whether it's diapers or toys. And all along that pathway, you have to continuously convert the plastics into those other goods. And so it's that whole supply chain all the way from the crackers through the final manufacturing that adds up to the 100,000 jobs.
So getting back to this idea of China Energy, I understand that obviously for years, but especially recently, there have been some folks from China Energy that have been here. They've been touring around. You've been involved with that. Can you tell us about those experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. China Energy investment portfolio that they had proposed to the state of West Virginia includes a number of different projects, and all of these projects are in various stages of development. It includes natural gas power plants, as well as chemical manufacturing facilities, and interest in investment of the storage hub. And throughout the chemical manufacturing portfolio, there's a number of different projects and project teams from China Energy that are working on various stages of those projects in development.
Again, that was Glynis Board speaking with the director of West Virginia University's Energy Institute. You can hear or read more from that interview online at wvpublic.org. Concerned citizens and state officials in an Eastern Kentucky community squared off this week over how to best deal with the tons of radioactive waste illegally dumped in a landfill. The waste came from the natural gas drilling called fracking. As Mary Meehan explains, years after the illegal dumping, this type of waste is still not adequately tracked or regulated.
In the fall of 2015, the state, the Energy and Environment...
That's Tom Bonney with the Concerned Citizens of Estill County, beginning a press conference with a recap of how fracking waste came to rest in Irvine. In the 2 years since, the community has come to a consensus on what should happen with the illegally dumped waste. Dig it up and move it out. As Estill resident Nancy Farmer put it,
removal of the contaminated waste is the best answer to this problem.
The State Environmental Protection Cabinet has other ideas and is considering a much cheaper proposal to manage the waste in place. But this disagreement is a small part of a big problem with tracking the disposal of fracking waste. Nadia Steinsor researches the issue for the nonprofit Earthworks.
Waste is kind of the forgotten stepchild of the oil and gas shale boom. It's something that people really need to pay more attention to and be more concerned about.
As the Ohio Valley Resource and Center for Public Integrity reported in 2016, the patchwork of state laws makes it hard to track waste as it is generated, processed, shipped, and dumped. Steinsor says there is more awareness of the problem because more communities are being affected. But she says little has changed.
But from a regulatory perspective, policies and mandates and requirements the industry has to adhere to are still lagging behind.
Steinsor says it's crucial for people living near landfills to be aware of what's being dumped there, but that's not easy.
There's one gentleman in West Virginia who's been tracking waste coming into landfills there, and he literally, you know, would stand at the entrance to the landfills and see all these trucks coming in. And he'd ask the drivers where they're coming from, and lo and behold, they're coming from oil and gas sites.
Rhonda Childers in Estill County has been concerned about contamination at the landfill for 20 years. She was part of a group of activists who worked to get the rules in place to keep out radioactive material. But as the landfill changed owners, those rules were violated.
And we let our guards down, and we just kind of ignored this.
The state has fined the landfill owners and is requiring a mitigation plan. But Childers says all communities should be vigilant about what is happening at local landfills.
We're talking about Estill County today. We could be talking about Powell County tomorrow. We could be talking about any county in Kentucky.
Or any county with a landfill. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan in Irvine, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. As construction of big natural gas pipelines like Rover continue to make their way across the region, thousands of miles of smaller pipelines are also being built in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio to connect drilling well pads to distribution systems. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports these lines have far less oversight and could be having big impacts on smaller streams and the wildlife that lives there.
High school students file into Nicole Costello's small reptiles class at the Penta Career Center in Toledo, Ohio.
All right, welcome to this.
They're learning firsthand how to foster an aquatic species that experts say is in decline, the eastern hellbender salamander. In a biosecured room on campus, 18-year-old Teresa Paff and other students clean the glass tanks, weigh and cut up worms to feed the young hellbenders they're raising. Paff picks up one that's 3 years old.
This is really hard to hold. They always like to move, and they're so slimy and slippery.
These are not the cute, colorful little salamanders that might come to mind. They're brown and mottled.
Some people would say so ugly they're cute.
Greg Lipps is an expert on hellbenders at Ohio State University and works with the high school program. He says there's good reason they're often called snot otters, Allegheny alligators, and old lasagna sides.
They're kind of a flattened, wrinkly-sided, beady-eyed salamander. Everything about them is made to live underneath a big rock in tight spots and darkness.
Lipps says the adults can get big, over 2 feet long, and can live 35 years or more. They're mainly found in streams along the Appalachian Mountains in Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio. And these guys are tough. The species has survived for 1 million years, which is why Lipps was so concerned when he and a colleague found an 82% drop in their populations in Ohio. They just weren't finding many young hellbenders.
It's kind of like if the whole world became a nursing home overnight. You know that the end is near if you don't have any youngsters in these populations.
Researchers suspect the problem has to do with increased sediment in the water. Young hellbenders are thought to live in little spaces in gravel beds that are easily filled with sediment. Lipps has watched as waterways, especially in the steep hills of eastern Ohio near the Pennsylvania and West Virginia borders, have gotten muddier. The reason seems obvious to him. Pipelines.
And you can trace this. It's not rocket science when you see the muddy water to drive upstream until you see clear water and then figure out, well, what's happening? Where's the in-between? And when I've done that, it's been pipeline construction.
Back taxiing runway 24, Marshall County.
To get a better picture of the gas pipeline boom here, Ted Alk of Frack Tracker, a nonprofit that tracks the fracking industry, has organized a tour by plane of West Virginia and Ohio. As we get into the air, he's floored by how many hillsides are cleared of trees to make way for pipelines.
Look at this one, Julie. Look at how zig and zagging this puppy is.
You can see these gathering lines connecting every well pad and compressor station. Ohio and Pennsylvania are among the states with the most gathering lines in the country, each with more than 20,000 miles of them. Pipeline companies are supposed to replant the pipeline corridors, but Alk says many don't.
That's all pipeline, see? And they have not hydroseeded that. You see what I'm talking about? And they've got that apron, that tarping material that's just supposed to prevent the loading of sediment down, but they didn't hydroseed any of that.
On the ground in eastern Ohio, the hills are alive with pipeline construction. To the north are the bigger transmission lines, the Mariner East and the Rover. Smaller gathering lines have names like the Hot Sauce Hustle and Dr. Awkward. Ohio State researcher Greg Lipps says when companies strip these steep hillsides of forest for pipelines, it can destroy his team's efforts to restore stream banks and protect the habitat for eastern hellbenders and other aquatic species.
What you create is effectively what can be a river of mud every time it rains. Now, it's really a problem, and the amount of silt and sediment that can come from a pipeline cut and from an eroding stream bank is immense.
Many of the new pipelines also cross the streams themselves, like here in Captina Creek, a high-quality stream and home to hellbenders. It empties into the Ohio River. The pipeline companies either bore underneath the stream bed or dig right through the water. According to an Allegheny Front review of applications to the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency, the state has issued at least 13 permits, including 66 pipeline stream crossings in the Captina Creek watershed alone since 2014. Harry Kalapolitis manages the Ohio EPA's permitting process. His agency, as required by the Clean Water Act, certifies that pipeline crossings are not going to jeopardize stream quality.
We evaluate what benefits to society it may have and weigh that against the potential impacts to water quality. Our lower bar is not jeopardizing the existing use or how that stream is performing. And we do authorize the potential lowering of water quality with potential mitigation to make up for that loss.
Kalapolitis says there's no regulation looking at the cumulative impacts of the new lines. But he says they have not seen impacts on any streams from multiple pipeline crossings.
We evaluate a lot of streams in Ohio. And, to my knowledge, we haven't had any of those reports come back to us and say that the stream is jeopardized by multiple crossings associated with pipeline projects.
Still, Kalapalaita says the Ohio EPA will propose new sediment regulations for pipelines in the coming months. And researchers at West Virginia University are starting to look at ways to reduce the environmental impacts of pipelines. Michael Strager is a professor of resource economics. In a study that just got funded, he plans to use GIS technology and drones to map pipelines in the region. And then his colleague will match the locations with water quality data in nearby streams.
So I think how our work is going to be useful is to really aid in the permitting process as part of a planning approach to really direct this industry to places where it can potentially have less of an impact than others.
Like students at the Penta Career Center, these West Virginia researchers want the waterways clean enough so species like the eastern hellbenders can survive here. The high schoolers will join experts and release the young salamanders into the streams of eastern Ohio over the summer. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting, WVPB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBL Bluefield, WVPW Buchanan, WVWV Huntington, WVEP Martinsburg, WVKM Matewan, WVPM Morgantown, WVPG Parkersburg, WVDS Petersburg, WVWS Webster Springs, WVNP Wheeling, and we're online at wvpublic.org. It's 8 o'clock.